The Arch of Titus is called a triumphal arch. And if the Jewish home was, following the destruction of Jerusalem, called to have, for 8 days a year, a lamp memorializing the menorah on one side and the mezuzah of monotheism on the other, then what took place was arch versus arch, entryway versus entryway, doorway versus doorway. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 98, The Arch Rival. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. London's Sigmund Freud Museum, housed in the home where he lived in the last years of his life, keeps in its collection a 13th century menorah that Freud had somehow kept hold of, indeed which he had taken pains to bring with him to London as he fled from Vienna in the moments before the war. Several have noted that it is odd that a centuries-old symbol of Jewish faith and observance should have been kept by one who denounced religion as superstition for his entire adult life. In fact, if we wish to know the extent of Freud's antagonism to Jewish observance, we need only look at his marriage. Freud was married to Martha Bernays, the granddaughter of a prominent Orthodox rabbi and scholar from Germany. And as the writer Norman Lebrecht tells us, Freud's wedding to Martha in his wife's grandfather's synagogue was, quote, Freud's last concession to Judaism. From that day on, he orders Martha to abjure religion. She confides in a cousin that not being allowed to light the Sabbath lights on the first Friday night after her marriage was one of her more upsetting experiences, end quote. So to find this menorah kept by Freud, to know that he schlepped this heirloom with him from Vienna, means somehow that it meant something to him. And the fact that despite his rebellion against his heritage, his patrimony, and his family's faith, he nevertheless held on to this item is interesting, to say the least. And perhaps, as Shama has suggested, this menorah can be linked to another menorah encounter. For in 1913, Freud had visited Rome. There he stood before the Arch of Titus, studying the etched image of the parade and the treasures of Jerusalem being born into Rome. Above all, the golden menorah. Despite his incredibly antagonistic relationship with his Jewish identity, something seems to have overcome Freud, leading him to send a postcard from Rome with a picture of the arch upon it to a friend. And on the postcard, Freud wrote, "The Jew survives it." In the end, that is what the observance of Chanukah, the remembrance of the everlasting oil, commemorates today. The sign of the divine hand in history that can be seen through the endurance against all odds of the Jewish people. Deep down, this is something that even the most stubborn may acknowledge. And if they permit themselves, they may momentarily experience awe. As the writer Hermann Wolk once put it, even in the heart of many antagonistic to Judaism, quote, there is a, I cannot say what, a feeling, not even a feeling, a shadow of a notion, nothing more substantial than the pointless but compelling impulse to knock on wood when one talks of the health of children. Something that says there is more to the Jews than meets the eye. There is a mystery about the Jews. This mystery makes the very word Jew a sure shocker on the stage, end quote. So Hermann Wolk writes, and it is only with this in mind that we can perhaps begin to make sense of Freud clinging to this centuries-old menorah. Shama begins his TV series on the history of the Jews in Freud's home in London, holding this menorah, which for Shama highlights how even Freud could not deny entirely in his heart of hearts the wonder of Jewish existence above all, against all. Of course, this does not take away from Freud's terrible antagonism to faith. And I should emphasize that it is horrifying to read of Freud banning his wife from practicing one of the most elemental and symbolically sublime rituals of the Jewish faith, the weekly lighting of Sabbath candles. But Freud's reaction to the arch, to the depiction of Titus's triumphant entry into Rome, is an apt one. He wrote, "The Jew survives it." We argued yesterday that a Torah taken from the temple was the most important and central element of the parade. But of course, as we know from the Arch of Titus, the menorah was also featured. And it was perhaps following this parade that remembrance of the temple menorah became even more central to the practice of Judaism. This, in turn, will allow us to understand how Jews ensured that Judaism would live on, so that Titus's announcement of Judaism's death was greatly exaggerated. During earlier episodes of Jerusalem 365, we had studied the original story of Chanukah, a word which means dedication. The holiday originally marked the dedication of the temple altar by Judah and the celebration inspired by Sukkot of the altar and the temple. Originally, the menorah was not the main focus of the Chanukah celebration. But 2 centuries later, the temple was destroyed, in part, as we have seen, because of the failings of the Hasmonean family itself. whose infighting had led to the Romans gaining a foothold in Judea. It was following the destruction of the temple that the question was obvious. What would happen to Hanukkah now? How could a holiday centered on the restoration of the temple continue when the Roman pagans had succeeded in destroying the temple and rendering it into ruins? It is at this point, and I'm drawing here on something that I heard in the name of Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik, Rabbinic Judaism focused on a miracle that had occurred during the cleansing of the temple by Judah the Maccabee. The small flask of oil that ought to have fueled a flame for one day, but instead lasted for eight, allowing the menorah, the candelabra of the temple, to burn so much longer than was expected, 8 days in all. Thus, following the destruction of the temple, around the time that the menorah was paraded through Rome, Rabbinic Judaism decided that though Jews could not celebrate the altar of monotheism in the temple, at the same time, the miracle of the menorah could be recalled and reenacted every year for 8 days. The rabbis following the destruction, in other words, oversaw an evolution of the holiday of Hanukkah, responding to the destruction by obligating us to kindle a lamp. This, as the Talmud describes, was originally ideally to be done not in one's window, but outside one's doorway. As the rabbis describe it, ner ish ubeito, a lamp for each home, adding mezuzah miyamin ner Hanukkah mismol, a mezuzah on the right, the Hanukkah lamp on the left. With this in mind, let us study the arch anew, and we have sent you pictures of it. The most famous image is on one side of the arch, that bearing the captured menorah, one through which the Romans declared that the special Jewish relationship with their God was over. But there is another panel on the arch, opposite the menorah, missed by most today, but which for the Romans was equally significant. It features Titus triumphantly entering the city, accompanied by the winged goddess of victory. That image proclaims, in other words, the divinization of the emperor and the triumph of paganism. Thus, here too, in the arch, we have an entryway, a Roman one, that piers a menorah with a theological proclamation. This means, as I argued in my Sacred Time series, that the method of Jewish lighting over Hanukkah following the temple's destruction can be seen as a response, intentionally or not, to the arch itself. The arch has pagan gods on one side of the entryway and the captured unlit menorah on the other. Jewish homes had the mezuzah of monotheism on one side of the doorway and the lit menorah of Judaism on the other. The observance of Hanukkah every year following the destruction of the temple, through ner ish ubeito, a lamp for every household, uniting a lamp with a mezuzah in the doorway, proclaimed, contra the arch, that so long as the Jewish family and the Jewish home exists, monotheism endures, Judaism endures, the memory of Jerusalem endures, and the remembrance of the temple endures. For the sages knew that even stripped of sovereignty and scattered over the earth, Judaism could still survive and ultimately endure if every Jewish home was made into a tiny temple, a spiritual sanctuary, one which remembered Jerusalem, a place whose very entryway contained a mezuzah and a menorah, alerting its inhabitants that in a world that hated the Jews were entering a haven, a Jewish home, a place of divine benevolence. Jews proclaimed, in a response that perfectly reverses the arch, God may have been exiled from his home in Jerusalem, but he could still take refuge in our homes. The Arch of Titus is called a triumphal arch, something that is itself a Roman creation. And if the Jewish home was, following the destruction of Jerusalem, called to have, for 8 days a year, a lamp memorializing the menorah on one side and the mezuzah of monotheism on the other, then what took place was arch versus arch, entryway versus entryway, doorway versus doorway. A contest of historic proportions, the Jewish home became an arch rival to the arch. Over the centuries, as I discussed in my Sacred Time series, the construction by kingdoms of triumphal arches continued. We know of more arches made in Rome, and we are familiar with Napoleon's Arc de Triomphe in Paris and the Marble Arch in England. All are expressions of empire, manifestations of military might. Meanwhile, also over the centuries, the Jewish creation of their own entrances continued as well. A mezuzah on the right, a menorah on the left. Even as the menorah was brought inside, many lit in this manner, placing the candelabra at one of the doorways of their homes. Consider the contrast. We have in triumphal arches the proud entryway of emperors and kings, and we have, on the other hand, the doors of humble Jewish domiciles. And yet, as empire after empire crumbled, the Jewish people and Judaism remained. Even as mighty monarchs adorned their cities with arches announcing their victories, Jews adorned the entrances to their homes with mezuzahs and menorahs, longing for their land and for a return of Jewish independence in that land, but also knowing that Judaism's and Jewry's ultimate eternity lay in ner ish ubeito, a lamp for every Jewish home. Professor Stephen Fine's book on the menorah describes how in 1853, the historian of ancient Rome, Ferdinand Gregorovius, wandered into the Jewish ghetto and saw that the menorah had become a living symbol of Judaism, carved on the walls and painted in the synagogue. And he reflected in wonder on the contrast between Rome's arch depicting Titus's parade, which had become itself a ruin, and how different it was from the living Judaism that he saw. Gregorovius wrote, quote, "If we descend from the Arch of Titus toward the Tiber and wander through the ghetto, we notice the seven-branch candelabrum engraved here and there on the walls of the inhabited houses. It is the same design which we just now saw in the arch, but here it is alive as the functioning symbol of the Jewish religion. And to this day there dwell in these houses descendants of the Jews whom Titus once led in triumph. If we visit the synagogue of the Hebrews, we see the same sculptures of the Ark of the Covenant, the golden table, the Jubilee trumpet decorating its walls. Beneath the figures of the temple vessels which Titus once brought to Rome, the Jewish people, still persisting, still undestroyed, offers up its prayers to the ancient God of Jerusalem." And Gregorovius here uses the biblical name for God the Jews do not pronounce, adding that this God has proved more powerful than the Capitoline Jupiter, end quote. Hanukkah, especially following the destruction of the temple, became a way of reflecting how the Jewish home would remember the temple and how it would be in the Jewish home that the light of the temple would burn bright. Norman Lebrecht, in his book Anxiety and Genius, tells us the following about what happened immediately after Freud's death, what Martha Freud did as soon as her husband passed away. Quote, "Martha lights Sabbath candles at the family table, and she continues to do so for the rest of her life," end quote. It is not only, as Freud said, that the Jew survives it, but also that the light of Judaism survives it. And of course, these two miracles are linked with one another. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.